Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I'm honored to share the microphone with the most interesting business leaders. Now, these are people who have wonderful stories to share, and they are here on my show, and they're excited to freely share their journeys, their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. In fact, my guests are so compelling and so insightful that this podcast was recently written up on Inc.com as one of the best business podcasts you need to be listening now. It has also been featured on Entrepreneur and MSNBC. So our topic today, employee versus contractor, with my HR specialist, Carmen Torres. In an ever-changing business landscape, more people are working from the comfort of their home offices, I certainly do, and more businesses are embracing the trend. Carmen will share her thoughts on how best to work with employees, whether it's traditional in-office, virtual, or a combination of both. Now about our guest, Carmen Torres brings over 20 years of experience creating equitable, safe, and collaborative workplace environments for both employers and employees. As a trusted advisor to many organizations, she has successfully helped countless small to mid-sized businesses and nonprofit organizations establish reliable, stable human health resources departments, and her approach includes a 360 analysis of the human resources function that results in building job descriptions, policy and procedures manuals, conflict resolution, employee retention and termination structures, compliance audits and standards, and employee communications. She brings a deep understanding of the complexities of managing human beings and meeting regulatory requirements while maintaining the organizational mission, achieving business goals, and meeting quality standards. And that's a perspective that turns her into an invaluable resource for many businesses and for our podcast today. Good morning, Carmen. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. This is a big topic, and I can't wait to dive in.
Good morning, Denise. I'm so excited to be here, and you're right. It's going to be a great topic to share with your listeners today.
Well, it's a big, big topic because, you know, as I mentioned, the landscape has changed over time. I mean, 10 years ago, people had to show up at the job, right, pretty much. You know, they had to show up, clock in, do their work, clock out, go home. And I'm not entirely sure that Zappos didn't kind of start this different landscape where they said, look, we don't care where you work from, just get the done, you know, get the work done to the best of your ability and help us shine. I think Zappos had something to do with that. But I would love to hear on a couple of different topics from you, you know, virtual, or I'm not sure what they call that, flex hours. There are different terms for it. And sometimes, you know, how do you know when the best time is to hire a full-time, you know, 1099 employee or a full-time W-2 employee or part-time? I mean, there's so many questions. So what I'm going to do is hush my mouth and let you take over.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. I think it's really important. One of the things that I've noticed is that business owners are just not familiar with the difference between hiring a regular employee and hiring an independent contractor. And unfortunately, this causes them to improperly classify their workers. Eventually, it could result in significant liability. So knowing the difference and making the best choice definitely saves the money, saves the company money, and it will protect them from any liability. One of the things that I do is I have my clients ensure that they keep really good records of their of the workers that they have. the way you determine whether or not a worker is an employee or an independent contractor is you, the employer has to determine, you know, what is the number, what is the potential hours that they're going to be working? How much time do you need the worker to work to be in this project? And do you offer them benefits, or is this something that, you know, is just for a specific period of time? And classifying them also requires you to have the record keeping. You need to know if you're going to be holding federal, state, and local income taxes. As I mentioned, you know, some of the benefits, whether it's sick time, vacation, holidays. And so there's a lot that goes into properly classifying your employees. And so one of the biggest things that you want to look at is who has control over the work that is being done. You know, the classification and the courts will closely look at, they're going to evaluate the relationship between the business and the worker. And some of the factors include control and independence. There are three factors that are actually considered. One of them is behavioral control. And this goes into, does the business have control over the worker and how they complete the job which they are being hired to do so? And does the business provide training to that worker? That is definitely one of the biggest factors that is considered. I recently had a client who misclassified their employees, and this was definitely something that was inquired about quite a bit. Another piece is financial control. You know, does the worker have the possibility of incurring a loss, or does the business accept financial liability, including expenses, to complete the work? So in this particular case, is the worker using company materials and company equipment in order to complete the work, or does the worker have their own equipment, and do they pay for their own travel? Do they get reimbursed for mileage? So there's so many things to consider. The third one then would be the relationship between the parties, which is, you know, what type of contract or agreement exists between the parties. Does the worker qualify for employee type benefits, like I mentioned at the beginning? You know, are they being paid for insurance and paid time off? Or, you know, does the worker have other projects that they're working on and not fully dependent on one client? That is one of the biggest things that is also considered, you know, whether the worker has the ability to receive funds from other clients and not just one. So how many hours are they putting into one as opposed to, you know, receiving funds from various clients. So the businesses make this crucial mistake because sometimes a worker just wants to be classified as an independent contractor because they don't want to pay the taxes up front. It's definitely not a good reason to classify someone as an independent contractor. You also, you know, sometimes the worker just, you know, asks to be classified this way. And so just because they set their own schedules or they work on an as-needed basis, it doesn't necessarily make them an independent contractor. There is a 20-factor test that's provided by the IRS, and this provides a little more clarity in helping employers determine whether their workers should be classified as independent contractors or employees, W-2s or 1099s. And it does help, definitely makes a difference. And one of the things that I encourage small business owners and to do is to follow that guideline. Use that guideline, answer some questions. And some of the questions that come up in that 20-factor test, you know, are, you know, does the worker or must comply with employer's instructions about how or when to do the work? You know, do they receive training from or at the direction of the employer? Again, you know, an independent contractor is someone who's going to be able to come in and do the work or complete an assignment or a project without direction from the employer. That is what they're being hired for, their expertise. So, there are other areas, other questions. Do they hire and supervise on behalf of the employer? That also could make someone an employee. So we want to be really careful. I know a lot of small businesses who do hire independent contractors and they utilize them in-house. They have them come in and be at the office a specific number of hours, or they have them supervise other employees. And, you may be breaking that employer independent contractor relationship by doing that.
I have a quick question. I work in the virtual world. Everything I do is virtual from my home.
Yes.
And I work with a lot of other virtual assistants, kind of helping them figure out what their business looks like. And I have clients all over the world practically. One thing that you said that made me go, now that's an interesting thought there, is that some, I don't call them employees, I call them clients because we are not, we're small business owners. But some clients will say, listen, I'm going to hire this new VA. I really like her personality. I like her get up and go. But she doesn't really have all the training I need. Let's just pick Infusionsoft out of the air because that's a toughie. So she doesn't really know Infusionsoft, but I'm willing to pay for her Infusionsoft training. What just happened there?
Yeah, so you just crossed the line, and now you're providing a training to your virtual assistant.
That was my question.
Right? Yes. Who you actually are hiring as an independent contractor because, very likely because they're working from their home, they can probably set their own hours. However, if you're directing them, if you're offering that type of training, there is a possibility that you could be crossing the line between employee and independent contractor. So following that 20-factor test that I mentioned from the IRS, that would be ideal to help you further determine whether or not they should be classified as an employee or as an independent contractor.
Can you make it a gift? I mean, there's got that to me seems burdensome when somebody just wants, of course, a lot of IRS seems burdensome to me, but it just seems a bit wrong when somebody says, look, I want to put this person to work. I really think she'd be a great team member, but she needs to come up to speed in this area or that. Why in the world would they have to pay taxes on that? I don't understand. So I guess what I'm asking, is there a way around that? Can you make it a gift? Can you maybe increase the contractor? Can you increase their wages to cover it for the near short term? I mean, what can be done, if anything? I'm not asking to break the law. I'm just trying to figure out, is there a way to really define this and then find an equitable workaround?
Right. And so many times you do need to consider pay when it comes to an independent contractor. And an independent contractor is not someone that's going to be paid on an hourly basis. So if you're thinking of paying someone minimum wage or, 1.5 times the minimum wage or so, I mean, that's probably still not going to qualify them as an independent contractor. An independent contractor is going to do work for a project or for a set number of, for a dollar amount, whether it be $1,000, but you're not attaching hours to it. So you're not saying, well, for 10 hours, you're going to get, $250. What you're doing is saying, this is a project that needs to be completed, and the base pay for that particular project is $1,000. So whether the worker completes that in 2 hours or in 25 hours, that's to them. However, if you are attaching hours to it, then again, you're likely using someone who should be classified as an employee and not an independent contractor. And that's where what you're referring to could make a difference, right? If you pay a particular salary amount and then they have to determine, if they need to spend more time on training or learning a particular software that you want them to use, then they would do that on their own time, but based on the salary pay that you agreed to from the beginning.
Okay, that is fascinating. I never even thought of any of this because everybody on my team obviously, works virtually, and I don't have paid employees, W-2 employees. think many of us don't anymore. So, I mean, these are things that we don't really even stumble across, I don't think. Or do we? Are you finding that people who are, you know, heading virtual teams, who are building virtual companies, are they kind of stumbling into blocks if they don't know these things?
Yes, it is something that I'm coming across quite often, Denise. And it happens more often than we think. It usually happens with small business owners like us, you know, because we are thinking, well, I just need someone, you know, 10 hours here and there, or I'm going to start them off with 10 hours a week and then eventually build it up. And what happens is that the reason why small business owners do this is we do get comfortable in not having to pay the employment taxes, not having to, you know, file, you know, for the employee taxes and offering the benefits that employees are eligible for or entitled to, like workers' comp, for example, or unemployment insurance, and in some states even, you know, sick time. And so what's happening is that by doing that, when an employee leaves your employment, because they felt that they were an employee and they go and file for unemployment benefits, it's then at that point determined that, oh, wait a minute, you are misclassified. As a result of that, what happens is that now you run the risk of being audited. And not only are they going to audit you for that particular worker, but they're going to check to see, well, how many other workers do you have? You know, do you have a team of independent contractors that are also being misclassified? And if so, I mean, the amounts that you're liable for could just, you know, be really high. In fact, I have a client who recently went through an audit, and they had about 5 workers misclassified. And I helped them through that audit process is when they called me in to find out, you know, what they did wrong and how do they prepare for this audit. So what we did is we provided all the records that were requested. And initially it started because of one worker who in fact believed they were eligible for unemployment benefits because they felt they were being treated as an employee. As a result of that, they ended up auditing all of the records and for going back to 3 years. Mind you, they also had employees, W-2 employees, and they had a team of about 5 independent contractors. So the audit wasn't just on that one person. It was on their entire business for 3 years. And right now it's still in the process, but if we look at the numbers and some of the preliminary numbers at this point, I mean, they're liable for at least $26,000 at this point. And that's without interest, you know, plus they're also going to be liable for 100% of the taxes that the employee would have had to pay into for those past 3 years. So that's a lot of money that you can be liable for when you misclassify. And so we have to ask ourselves from the start, you know, is it worth it to make that, you know, just for that small time frame because we want them to learn a particular software? Or are we willing to train them and hire them on as an employee so that you don't risk your business and you don't, you know, risk having to pay that kind of money? You know, other clients, I have another client who has a debt of, you know, started at $80,000. They too, unfortunately, misclassified a group of 30 workers. And so, again, it could be so high and you don't want to take that risk. I encourage all small business owners in particular to, you know, learn about classifications, to speak to a specialist, an HR specialist or an attorney who can support them and help them make the right decision for their business. And there are situations, you know, there are times where you can have independent contractors and it's not as common. And it's easy to say, well, I'm just going to have this person for a month or I just need them for the summer, so I'll just hire them as an independent contractor. But if they're in your office day in, day out, clocking in or calling you because they're going to be out the next day or letting you know they have to leave early on a particular day, that's very likely an employee that you have on your hands there.
Okay, you just said something very interesting and something I hadn't even thought of. So what I'd like for you to do is tell me and our audience, what is the difference between an HR specialist and, say, your your garden variety bookkeeper or accountant? I mean, as small business owners, we all have accountants, we all have bookkeepers. I don't think too many of us just go, I need an HR specialist. So I would love for you to
absolutely
go deeper into that topic.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you, Denise. So the difference is, and what I see is that accountants and bookkeepers are, you know, they have a specific job, and their job is to help you with your business taxes and allocating funds and, distributing the monies and making sure that all the monies that are coming in are in the right place, including payroll. It's one of the things that they specialize in. Payroll taxes, and paying the IRS, etc. Now, sometimes the view of a accountant or a bookkeeper will differ from that of an HR specialist or an attorney who is there to, protect you from employment liability. And what we are looking for as HR specialists is we're looking to ensure compliance with state, federal, and local regulations. And compliance, many times, bookkeepers and accountants don't understand the employee rights. And that is the area in where HR specialists specialize in. That is our specialty, to ensure that the employee receives all of the rights and that the employer is compliant. So we're looking at this from the standpoint of long-term, what regulations do you have to follow? There are so many wage and hour regulations that need to be followed, meal and break periods that need to be followed. And unfortunately, it's not the area that accountants and bookkeepers specialize in. So
I am realizing
great,
that.
Right? Yes. And they might give you information that they believe is the best way for your taxes. Absolutely. It's beneficial. They're looking at the benefit from the tax point, and I'm looking for your benefit from avoiding, liability and ensuring compliance.
So when you work with new clients, I'm guessing, and this is just me being curious, I'm guessing that you not only talk with the clients, but you're also in touch with their bookkeeper, their accountant. You're looking at the whole big picture, I would assume.
Yes. So one of the things that I do through the assessment when I first begin to work with the client is, see where they are, what they're doing, what's working, what's not working, what kind of record keeping do they have. And in many occasions, yes, we do connect with the payroll department or their bookkeeper, their accountant, particularly if through the assessment I determine that there is some misclassification. Many times the client says to me, this is how my bookkeeper recommended, or this is what, the feedback that I received from them. And so then I will set up a call with them to determine where that decision making came from, and then to ensure whether or not that is the best way to classify those workers. So it does require, working with them as well.
I would imagine that it would have to. So why in the world did you go into this business? I'm stressed. Listen, I'm getting tense just listening to this. I have to be honest with you. I'm just going, oh, my God. I hear regulations and I hear IRS and, I hear all those words and all that just go, oh, mother of God. None of us want to hear those words. Why in the world did you go into this arena?
I mean, love your question.
You love it. I can tell. I can tell you love it. But what is it about it that is so fascinating to you?
Well, I think one of the things that I realized several years down the road after I had gotten into this is that, well, first, I got into it because I was working for a company doing payroll, and they had an HR department, but they didn't have someone who spoke Spanish. So they deferred to me, on a regular basis, and I would, pretty much be the communicator and connect with the staff who didn't speak Spanish, mostly in the warehouse. And I realized, wow, I really like this. I really like helping people, and I like helping communicate the policies and the procedures. And as a result of that, I decided to shift from payroll into human resources, and I've been doing it ever since. And with the last employer that I had back in 2009, which is when I actually became independent, an independent contractor myself, I was working for a company. I had to lay off 90% of the staff. And through that layoff, yes, right, top of 2009, mm-hmm. and, you know, it's happening everywhere. But Denise, through that layoff, I realized that it is in the way that we communicate information to our employees that makes a difference of how they feel about your company long term and how they, you know, will view you and their experience. And so I knew that this was going to be a huge hit for our team. I mean, we had team members who made life changes to be a part of this project that we were working on. And then, unfortunately, to have to lay off so many people and displace so many families. And it was in the way that we provided the message, the way that we provided the details that had to be given to them, and then severance packages and unemployment, you know, information and audits that needed to be completed. And it's when I realized, wow, there is a big need right now. What was happening is that I wasn't able to find work myself, and I was laying off so many people. The same thing was happening with so many other companies. And I started getting calls from friends who owned businesses or friends who are being laid off. And they had all these questions about, is this right? How do I handle this situation? You know, can I terminate these employees? I don't have any more money. And I realized, wow, there are so many small business owners who have questions. There is a need that they have right now, and they just cannot afford to have a full-time HR person. So I decided to step in as an independent consultant and answer their questions and help them. And eventually, you know, 8 years later, here I am with my own business, my HR specialist. And I love it. And it's what I do. I focus on the small to medium-sized business owner. It's who needs it the most. And it's just really exciting to be able to support them with that need.
I think that this is a fascinating story in so many ways. I mean, I love the way that you're describing, you know, how you communicated with these people and, you know, made sure that they weren't just kind of shuffled out the door, pick up your lunchbox, go, it's been nice to know you, which
right.
does happen, I think. You know, there's nothing worse than seeing somebody with their box, their little white banker box, being escorted out of a building, you know, between two armed security guards when they did nothing. They were just terminated. I think that's just horrible visuals, but, you know, I love the story, and I really like that you saw a need and you created a niche for yourself, and that's what so many of us do. That's how small businesses
yes.
are created.
Absolutely, and they do say, you know, one of the things that I keep hearing is, you know, those who create a business during those downtimes are the ones who, you know, are actually able to get through and succeed in what they're doing, you know, because
you come
from a place, right? Yeah, so it's really exciting. I'm very happy to be a part of that. And something else that you said right now, too, is that, you know, just letting people go and, hey, see you later. It's when you let people go that you are most liable for a potential risk. And that's why you have to be so careful when you're letting employees go, whether it be for a layoff or terminating them for another reason. You have to be cautious and, you know, make sure that you have that proper documentation. Make sure that you are asking yourself the questions, because so many lawsuits, you know, come into place when employees are disappointed. That's when you're at most risk. You know, when an employee is disappointed, you know, they're disappointed about the way they've been let go. And before you know it, you might have an hour and wage claim, you know, for non-payment of overtime or claiming that they didn't receive adequate rest and meal breaks. So keeping adequate records is crucial prior to terminating.
And these days, I mean, with social media being what it is, with anger at levels that I don't think I've ever seen across the board, it's, you know, I think there's a lot of danger out there for lawsuits, for, you know, workplace violence, for, you know, people who are just ticked off that they got terminated for whatever reason. I mean, some of them should have been terminated probably sooner rather than later. But, you know, we're dealing with a lot of different things going on right now. So I agree with you, you know, keeping those adequate records and making sure that, you know, when you do have to terminate someone, that you give them as many options as you can, as much information as you can. You're not hiding in corners and avoiding their eyes. Yeah, that's a big deal. You know, talk to your employees, I think. Let them know what's going on. Sometimes the fear is almost worse than the actual, you know, termination, I think. Because people know when it's coming, don't they? I mean, you know, if they can read the tea leaves.
They can. And the way that happens is that, you know, you need to follow your own policies. If you have a policy in your handbook that says that you're going to offer them a 90-day review, you need to follow through on that. Because if you don't follow through, if you don't review them after 90 days, and then 6 months down the road you want to terminate them because they are not doing well, or, you know, you don't believe they're working to their full potential, or they're making two mistakes, well, it's been 6 months, and if you haven't talked to them prior to that about their performance, in their mind, they're the best employee. They're doing great because they didn't even need a 90-day performance evaluation because they're doing so great, right? So use that 90-day evaluation. So, and use it whether or not whether they're doing well or they're not, use it either way. If they're doing well, let them know where they are doing well, and let them know, okay, here's the goal. Here are the next steps for the next 3 months. You know, can we accomplish this? So give them stepping stones so that they can keep improving. And if they're not doing well, then set the tone as well. Say, you know, this is where we should be. This is where we are. And this is where we need to go. You know, if we don't see improvement in the next 30 days or so on and so forth, these could be the consequences. The consequences can be that, you know, we are going to move you to another department, or it may even be termination. And if you don't let them know in advance, they will be surprised. And it happens quite often, as I mentioned, you know, just a few moments ago, is you're going to get those claims when the employee is disappointed, and they're disappointed when you don't communicate with them. That is one of the things that I've discovered most, you know, with my clients, is that communication is so important. Employees want to know when they're doing well, and they want to know when you want them to improve and where you want them to improve. So it's very important to keep that line of communication open, document your 90-day performance evaluations, and then follow through when you say, I'm going to check in on you in 30 days, or in 30 days we're going to see where you're at again. Check in with them, even if they're doing great and they've just, you know, did a 100% turnaround. Check in with them again and let them know where they are.
And that makes perfect sense. I mean, Google Calendar is your friend. Once you've had these conversations with them, put it in your calendar. If you say, I'm going to talk with you in 30 days, when 30 days pops up in your calendar, get them in the office. Not that difficult to do.
It's not. It's not. And unfortunately, we put it off because we feel, you know, there's so many things going on, so many other things. And in fact, I find that that happens most often when the small business owner, or when the owner is the one who's doing all of it. So that's another thing that we have to learn to do as business owners, right? We have to learn to delegate. We can't be our payroll person. We can't be the accountant, the bookkeeper. I mean, we have to delegate some of these tasks to the people who specialize in them. So as the business owner, your goal is to grow your business and to bring in, you know, to develop new business. And the last thing that we want to do is to discipline an employee or to have to sit with them, because it is time consuming. It's time consuming. And so it's important to have a person on your team, you know, train someone to be able to do that and support you with that, so that you don't have to do everything on your own.
Well, and that leads me to another question very quickly, because I can hear it right now. I can see people listening going, but I can't afford all that. I'm not even taking my own salary. How am I supposed to afford this? And I know you get this question.
Yes. Yes, I do, Denise. And one of the things that my company does is that we can support the small business owner with, letting you know or tracking for you, support you with putting together a plan and then sending you those reminders so that you can stay on track. And when you have someone else supporting you with that, it's easier to follow through on those meeting commitments. You know, when you have someone sending you, oh, by the way, you know, 90-day reviews are coming up for the following two or three employees. Here's the documentation that you want to use. Here are the dates, and, you know, set your dates with your employees. And we can do that for them. We can support them through that. This way they don't have to have a full-time manager on board, but they have the support that they need to ensure compliance and to ensure proper documentation, which is, again, you know, the way that you take care of your business is by having proper documentation.
Right. I know you're stressing that, and I believe you.
I am.
Do. So let's go back to the employee handbook, because you mentioned that. And I know that you mentioned the 90-day review. What are some other really critical items that need to be included in an employee handbook? Now, in the virtual world, we have what we call SOP, standard operating procedures, not the same thing,
yes.
But they may kind of come close. So let's talk about the employee handbook first and then maybe go on to SOPs.
Absolutely. So again, you remember your employee handbook is a way to communicate your policies and the expectations. And it's a great platform to do that in a positive manner. And it's an opportunity for the employer to share about their mission, their vision, and to set the tone. And it helps the employee and the employer be accountable. And it also helps, you know, any managers, you might have managers who have to reference the handbook. So this is the place where all your policies and procedures are going to be. Policies such as sexual harassment or a conduct policy. It's really important to have a conduct policy in place because there's no way that you're going to be able to list every type of conduct that an employee must follow. However, you know, make sure that it includes sufficient information so that the employee know that they can be terminated or suspended or written up for not following particular policies. Other information that you want to have in your handbook is benefits information. You definitely want to have the required information for workers' compensation, unemployment insurance information, leave of absences. A lot of companies must provide leave of absence to their employees for different reasons, whether it be for medical, pregnancy, disability, or bereavement leaves, or jury duty, and for voting, being able to go out and vote. The more common benefits that are also included are, you know, if you offer medical insurance, dental and vision, do you offer a 401k? Have that information on there. And it doesn't have to have all of the specific deals, details, but it should have whether or not the company offers it. And if so, when does the employee become eligible? Is it after 90 days of employment? Is it after 6 months? So you want to have that type of information on there. And the other ones would be vacation, paid sick time, holidays. Those are definitely things that you want to include. These are the kind of benefits that the employees are looking for. They're going to reference your handbook. And it's a great tool to have. I always encourage the client to provide a hard copy document to their staff. Or if they do have electronic email available, they can send it to them in electronic email. But the most important thing when you are offering a handbook to your staff is to make sure to receive a signed acknowledgement form from them. The signed acknowledgement form is your proof that they actually received their handbook. Or having a meeting, an onboarding meeting with them, I think that would be great to do if time permits, where you actually get to review policies from your handbook and you give the employee an opportunity to ask questions if they don't understand or if they need some clarification on some of the policies that are listed in there. But again, receiving the signed acknowledgement form from your employees is important, and that should be kept in their employee file.
And there's many ways to do that. If it can't be done physically, there's DocuSign, there's WooCommerce, and you know, there's a lot of apps out there that allow you to sign things online. It's not an impossible hurdle anymore. You can do it virtually.
You sure can. You sure can. There are so many opportunities for onboarding, you know, like you said, via the web. And so no excuse not to have the signed authorization.
Right. Okay, so I interrupted you a bit ago, and I'm so sorry. Do you remember where I interrupted you, what your thought was?
Let's see. No, as a matter of fact, I do remember. However, we did touch on it in your last question.
Cool. All right. So
yes.
When you're going to terminate an employee, and I'm guessing that this can pretty much be, you know, whether they're in-house, W-2, or they're 1099, what are some of the things that you really need? Where do you really need to be careful before you terminate an employee?
Great. So the first thing I want to touch on is you mentioned when you're terminating a 1099. If we're already in the mindset of terminating a 1099, then I have to believe that the employer is likely misclassifying that worker. And notice that I'm calling them a worker and not an employee, right? So what we want to do is when you are ready to terminate an agreement for a independent contractor or a 1099 worker, and there should be a clear indication of a completion of project. So what you want to save to an independent contractor is the project has ended or the project will end as of such and such date. You know, submit your final invoice, and then we will pay it within a certain time frame. So that's dependent on the agreement that you have. That is the way you should terminate an agreement for an independent contractor. Now,
okay, that makes
when
sense.
You, right? Yes. And so that's where I like to be very clear, because I want to make sure that the business owner is not misclassifying their workers. So that was the first part. Now, when it comes time to terminating an employee, you want to make sure of a few things. You know, you want to consider, have they recently complained of a grievance, such as a work-related injury, you know, harassment, bullying? You want to take that into consideration. And you also want to ask yourself, is this employee in a protected class? You know, are they disabled? Did they just recently complain to me about migraines? And, or are they out a lot because of medical reason? You know, so you want to be very careful not to terminate because of a disability. Or are they over the age of 40? And, you know, age discrimination is a huge factor. And terminating an employee without cause is allowed as long as it's not for discriminatory reasons, which, again, you know, asking the right questions and having the appropriate documentation, as I keep saying, is so important.
Now, is that, when you say that's allowed, is that in all states or just right-to-work states like my state?
Yeah, so right-to-work states, and those are the,
okay.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, if you have, many times we have in our handbooks a procedure for discipline. And you want to be careful that your procedures in your handbook is not so specific that it doesn't allow you to terminate an employee for any reason. So, for example, you might have someone who is out of the office regularly or comes into work late on a regular basis. You want to take the steps necessary. If you notice that they're late two times in 1 week, and then on the third time, you may need to address it with them. And it could be a verbal conversation. It could be a verbal warning. And you let this person know, you know, Tom, you've been late two times or three times in the last 7 days. What's going on? Is there something I need to be aware of? No, it's just, you know, I had car trouble or there was a little extra traffic or I took a different route, whatever the reasons might be. So you want to let them know, okay, well, it's important for you to be at work on time. It has an impact on your coworkers or on our clients when you're not available to pick up their call, you know, when you're due to be there. And so you let them know that you're going to document this as a verbal documentation in their file. And you make note of that so that the next time when they're out again a couple of times or when they're late, now you can say to them, you know, this seems to be consistent and it's not compliant with the policies that we have for our workers. And so now this is a written warning. And it's fine to go through the steps when someone is late and then suspend them if you need to. And eventually it could lead to termination. However, if there is an act of violence or someone's conduct is it just completely improper for the workplace, you may need to suspend them immediately and not go through the verbal warning, not go through a written warning, but terminate them or suspend them if necessary. So,
now, what is the difference between suspend and terminate?
So suspending could be, the difference is that when you suspend someone, you might suspend them for a period of 1 day, or sometimes I've seen suspensions even up to 5 days. And it just depends on the incident, you know, or how many incidents have they had, how many similar incidents have they had. So an employer might not be ready to terminate them, and they want to give them, you know, a form that they use to try to correct the behavior with an employee. This is like your last opportunity before a termination takes place. And so many employers do use suspension as a form of correcting the worker's behavior. The termination, other employers actually will also suspend an employee to help them evaluate the situation, to maybe even do an investigation and determine what the outcome should be. So they might need a couple of days to do that. And many times they'll come back and say, okay, you know, we're going to suspend you, or you've been suspended. This will go into your record. Another incident, a similar incident, will, you know, become or will determine termination. Now, some employers will suspend in order to prepare final paychecks, because we also, when we terminate someone, you have to provide them their final pay and any accrued vacation or PTO time. You have to provide that final pay immediately at the time of termination. So that might be another reason why an employer would suspend someone prior to terminating them.
I hadn't even thought of that. So, I mean, that just, I had this aha moment when you said that. Well, that makes sense. Can you tell
us,
it's been a very long time since I've worked for somebody else. I don't even remember most of this stuff. I made myself unemployable many years ago. But okay,
well, that's
so
wonderful.
With my personality and, you know, my extreme introversion, it's the only way I can operate. I'm not unfriendly and I'm not shy, but I am an introvert. I mean, big time. Okay, so let's go back just a bit. So when you're getting ready to just say, okay, Billy Bob, enough already. You're not going to fit into our work culture. You're not showing up on time. You're actually kind of a bit of an ass, which I'm sure happens all the time. What do you do to protect yourself? As an employer, I mean, how do you – clearly compassion is in order. But sometimes you just have to say, out, get out now. Did you kind of cover that already, or are there maybe other things that we need to talk about in that scenario?
Yes.
Because it does happen.
We do need to cover. Absolutely, it does happen. It happens quite often. And it's when we say the wrong things that, you know, we're most at risk for liability, you know, for a claim. And first, I tell my employers to stay calm. Remain calm. Don't become agitated. I know sometimes it's difficult. And the first thing we want to say is, I'm so upset. I can't believe you did this. I'm done with you. You're out of here. It's not the best way to go into it. You know, again, have someone that you can talk to, check in with an HR specialist, or check in with your attorney before processing that termination if you're at that point of agitation. Now, if you're not, and, you know, many times we're not, we can be very calm, and we know that a decision needs to be made. And so what you want to do is you want to go into that meeting very clear. First, you want to have the proper information that you should be providing to the employee that's about to be terminated. You want to make sure you have a change in status or change in relationship notice to the employee. And this is simply a one-page form that says to the employee, your last day of employment is on such and such date. Your final paycheck is attached in the amount of so much. It includes pay for the number of hours that they've worked or for that week, for example. You need to include any vacation or PTO time that they're eligible for. And let them know, you know, if they have medical insurance through your company, you need to let them know about whether or not they'll qualify to continue their medical insurance through a COBRA program, for example. And then what you do is you also provide them any unemployment benefits information that your state requires. And you need to be just direct with them. You say to them, Bob, you know, I've called you in today because, you know, after a review of your performance, and we just had a meeting last week and again this week, we've seen no improvement, and it's just time for us to let you go, you know, based on the information, based on the meetings that we've had in the past. Today is your last day. Here's your information. Here's your final pay. This is what it includes. So you want to be just very short, clear, concise, direct. The last thing you want to do is apologize to someone for making that decision. The employee sometimes is just not thinking about what you're saying to them. They're already making up their own stories in their mind. Like, wait a minute, why am I being terminated? I was just told yesterday that, you know, I'm one of the best employees. And so, again, that's why you have to be so careful with the message that you give your team. You need them to know on a regular basis where they are, where they stand in their performance. And if they are doing great, yes, let them know they're doing great. But if there is an area where, that needs improvement and that is a core part of their responsibilities, they should definitely be aware of it so that when you terminate them, they're not surprised.
No kidding. Now, why don't you want to apologize to them? I think I know, but I can't wait to hear.
Yes. Right. So you don't want to apologize to them because you don't want them to think that you are making this decision for the wrong reasons. That's where you're going to be slapped with a wrongful termination claim. So be very careful again. Like I said, you know, be very clear as to why you're terminating them. I'm terminating you because you've been late 40 times in the last 60 days of employment. And that is just too many times. And so, you know, I'm terminating you because you have been out of the office for unexcused absences. You have 6 unexcused absences in the last 30 days. So be very clear, and there is nothing to apologize for, you know, when you're terminating someone for a very specific reason, particularly if those policies are listed in your handbook. So be just cautious about
right.
apologizing.
Mm-hmm. And it's their behavior that brought them to this point, not yours.
Yes,
but it is
that
difficult.
Is
I mean, I'm picturing while you're talking, I'm picturing some guy being fired going, oh God, now what do I tell my wife? I have to come up with a good reason why this isn't my fault. I mean, you know that's what's happening.
I know,
did
Denise.
They fire me and I hate them and blah, blah, blah. And it was your own fault. You didn't go to work on time.
Right, that's true. And you know, one of the things that I talk to my clients about is that, you know, they feel bad. They say, oh my gosh, but he just had a new baby, or, you know, they just bought a new home, or, you know, they just moved. And you have to be, it's so difficult not to connect, you know, with your employees and not to feel that way, especially when you're a small business owner and you work so tightly with one another. It is very difficult. You have to run your business and you have to do it right when you terminate. You have to do it right when you bring someone on board, because I've seen it so many times is that the employee also receives information from other sources, outside sources, and there's so many commercials nowadays, you know, asking you, are, you know, were you wrongfully terminated, and, you know, do you have a claim for, you know, workers' comp pending? And so there's
right.
so many things that employees are being guided toward, and you have to do the right thing from the beginning, and you have to take care of your business too.
And I think that's what you said right there is very important. If you can't take care of your business, if you can't be a profitable business, a well-run business, you're going to fail. And you can't let, you know, certain employees just, you know, drag you down because they don't either want to show up on time or they're argumentative, which leads me to my next question. Oh, my gosh, we've got about 5 minutes. Remember, I told you this is about the quickest 60 minutes on the Internet.
Yes.
But I do, these days, I mean, Fox News is a big case in point. Sexual harassment all over the place. It's really just getting disturbing. So let's talk about what an employer should do when confronted with a harassment complaint, whether it's sexual complaint or harassment by bullies, you know, on their team. Just let's talk about that very quickly because I think it's a big topic right now.
Yes, absolutely. So the first thing they should do is you want to act quickly and carefully to avoid discrimination and harassment complaints, right? So take every concern seriously, and you want to conduct an investigation immediately to address the matter. Definitely keep an open mind. Treat the complainer with respect and compassion. Sometimes it is difficult to believe that harassment or bullying could be happening in your place of business because we're not seeing it from that point of view. You know, we see everyone getting along, but sometimes amongst coworkers, it definitely happens. So be open to that. Don't retaliate. This is against the law, and you don't want to punish someone for complaining about discrimination or harassment. Some of the ways that we can avoid that is by, don't change the schedule. Don't write them up immediately after, you know, an incident because of a minor incident that happened with them. So be very cautious about that. Follow your established policies that you have. Like I mentioned earlier, that should be in your handbook. You should definitely have a policy on sexual harassment and the steps that an employer will take and the steps that the employee should be able to follow in order to, give a complaint. And then educate yourself, you know, do some research on the law of discrimination and harassment. Know what your responsibilities are as an employer. And, you know, just when you go through the process of interviewing and doing an investigation, you want to keep it confidential, write everything down. And, you know, you may even need to consider hiring an investigator. It's something that I do on a regular basis as well. I'm hired to come on and do investigations and interview your team members. And again, just like I said, you know, keep an open mind, don't retaliate, follow your procedures, educate yourself, and keep things confidential and write everything down. That is the best way to ensure compliance when it comes to harassment.
Excellent. There were, and I don't even know if we have time for this, Carmen, but one of the questions that I have are what are the most important things someone should prepare prior to hiring an employee? I should have started with this at the very top, but I didn't, and I apologize. But you know, we just got to talking, and it just kind of flew by. But, I mean, can you very quickly just kind of go down maybe three of the most important things that we should be looking for?
Yes, absolutely. And these are my top three. This is what I recommend. You want to have a job description. Your job description sets the expectation of the position, and it can be referenced anytime that you have a performance setback. So job description, onboarding procedures, and this includes training. You want to make sure that your new hire starts and that they have the impression that you care about them. You care about the position and about their success as an incoming employee. So onboarding procedure. And the third one, it's your employee handbook. We've been talking about that. This is what helps you communicate the rules and the policies. Those are the three things that you should definitely be prepared with.
Excellent. We've got about 60 seconds. And I've been asking this a lot of my guests recently. What are your success rituals? What gets you out of bed in the morning, and what makes, you know, we all have them. We all have success rituals. With me, it's I go outside in the morning. I try to meditate. I'm not very good at it yet. I tend to fall over and drool. But I'm trying. But one of the things I do is I go outside and I take off my shoes. It doesn't matter if we're in the middle of mud season or it's cold out there.
Yes.
I don't care. I get under my pecan trees and I dig my feet into the grass and I ground myself. That's just one of them. So what are some of your success principles that you would not spend a day not doing because they're so important to you?
Oh, thank you, Denise, and I love yours. And mine is a glass of water first thing in the morning. I feel that it replenishes me. That is definitely the one thing that I do every single morning. And then I say what I'm grateful for. Usually it's 2 to 3 things that I'm grateful for in the morning. And I have a timer, 3 things on it, and it's I am love, I am peace, I am joy. And those are the 3 things that I say to myself all the time. I follow them every morning, and I wouldn't be able to have a great day if I didn't do that each morning.
And see, I love those. I love water. You will not get a Pepsi or a Coke or anything in my house. Sweet tea if you must, but I'll dump it out as soon as everybody's gone because I live in the South and everybody wants that god-awful sweet tea. But I'm like you. I drink a lot of water, and I do start my day with water and gratitude. You know, before I get out of bed, I stretch and my arms always go up to the skies, and I'm saying thank you. I'm just so grateful. So we have a lot in common, my girl.
Wonderful.
Well, listen, Carmen, where can people find you on the web? You've, you know, given us a lot of information. So where can people find your website, your social media, anything that you may want them to kind of download as a report? Just let us know.
Thank you, Denise. Yes, I'd love to offer your listeners my 3 special reports. The first one is actually employee versus contractor. And there's the benefit of having an employee handbook and then interns to pay or not to pay. And they can simply go to my webpage at myhrspecialist.com. And they can also find me on Facebook, also at myhrspecialist.com. And I'm so grateful to have been speaking with you today.
It was thoroughly enjoyable, Carmen. Thank you so much. You've been a great guest. And I'm telling you, you gave us a lot of eye-popping information. So as is always the case, this podcast hour went way too fast, and I thank you for everything that you shared with our audience. And today's episode was sponsored by my company, Your Office on the Web. If you are looking for full-on business creation services, such as web development, virtual assistants, online business management, social media marketing, and honestly, so much more, please visit Your Office on the Web. And be sure to look for us in iTunes, download us, and listen. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Carmen, thank you.
Thank you, Denise.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottogovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.